Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC Studios, I'm Brian Lehrer. This is my Daily Politics Podcast. It's Tuesday, April 9th. If you took time from obsessing on the eclipse yesterday to take in any political news, you probably know that Donald Trump staked out a new, or is it new, position on abortion rights now that there is such a backlash, right, ever since he fulfilled his 2016 campaign promise to get Roe v. Wade overturned by appointing anti-Roe justices to the Supreme Court. He appointed three. They did what Trump promised, as you all know. And in elections and referenda ever since, voters, even in red states, have made it clear that, by and large, they want women to have the right to choose. So a little Trump history here. In 1999, when he was first being looked at as a potential presidential candidate, he said this on NBC's Meet the Press with host Tim Russert when asked if he supports even late-term abortion rights.
I'm very pro-choice. I hate the concept of abortion. I hate it. I hate everything it stands for. I cringe when I listen to people debating the subject. But you still, I just believe in choice.
Trump in 1999. But when he was running in 2016, he had the memorable exchange with Chris Matthews on MSNBC, which ended like this.
Do you believe in punishment for abortion? Yes or no, as a principle?
The answer is that there has to be some form of punishment.
For the woman?
Yeah, there has to be some form.
So in 99, he was pro-choice. By 2016, he wanted women behind bars. Yesterday, he released a video on Truth Social, which answered one question but begged several others.
My view is now that we have abortion where everybody wanted it from a legal standpoint, the states will determine by vote or legislation or perhaps both, and whatever they decide must be the law of the land, in this case, the law of the state. Many states will be different. Many will have a different number of weeks, or some will have more conservative than others, and that's what they will be. At the end of the day, this is all about the will of the people. You must follow your heart or, in many cases, your religion or your faith.
Very confusing clip, actually, and we'll discuss why and talk broadly about abortion continuing to develop as an issue in the presidential and congressional campaigns this year with Molly Ball, senior political correspondent for The Wall Street Journal. Hi, Molly. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
So there are the things Trump said yesterday and the things he didn't say. We have more clips. But by way of background first, why did he say anything in a new video on the issue rather than just let his record of overturning Roe stand on its own?
Well, that's a very good question. I think he seems to want to put this issue to rest. But as you say, the statement that he did put out raised as many questions as it answered. So it certainly didn't do that. However, he has been under a lot of pressure to take a position on the many lingering questions that the overturning of Roe v. Wade created, because that Supreme Court decision nearly 2 years ago now did send the decision making back to the states. It raised a lot of questions about how we move forward as a nation, whether there ought to be some kind of federal legislation creating a framework for when abortion is or is not allowed, how states should administer this, things like medication abortion, which is currently before the Supreme Court. There's all sorts of policy areas that the Supreme Court decision actually opened up, and that we have seen policymakers in various states and at the federal level be engaged with. And so certainly activists on both sides of this issue do not see this as a closed issue, and there's a lot for politicians to take a stand on.
To take one of the things you just mentioned first, the Supreme Court case that they're currently deciding on whether to ban the abortion medication, mifepristone, has Trump taken a position on that? Do you know?
He has not. I have not seen anywhere where he has even commented on that. And that's one of the many outstanding questions that he has yet to answer.
And on what he did say yesterday, he said, leave it to the states. But he did not say explicitly that He would oppose any kind of national restrictions if a Republican Congress were to send him some, though a lot of people are hearing it that way. Leave it to the states means no federal ban. Is it clear that he drew the line somewhere?
Absolutely not. If anything, it seems like a message that was almost designed to be unclear. He has said in the past many times that he believes there could be some kind of accommodation or compromise that pleases everyone. But I think we all know that this is an issue where you can't please everyone because it is so divisive, so polarizing, and because people do feel so passionately on all sides of this issue. But he seems to have wanted to take a position that would be perceived as moderate. He's said many times that he views this issue as a political loser for the Republican Party, and that's a statement that checks out. We have seen public opinion really move toward the pro-abortion rights side of this issue in the years since Roe was overturned. We've seen it be a very galvanizing, mobilizing issue for voters, if not always for the Democratic Party and its candidates. And so, Trump doesn't want to lose the presidential election by taking a very hardcore pro-life stance, and he was criticized by many voices in the pro-life movement for the stand that he did sort of take because of that, and because, as you say, there are a lot of anti-abortion rights activists who would like to see some kind of federal limitation, who would like to see a national framework passed by Congress that would say no abortions after a certain number of weeks. We've seen that proposed in Congress, and in fact, get a lot of Republican sponsors in the Senate right up to before Roe was overturned. So Trump, as you said, strongly implied that he would not support something like that, but he did not come out and say that he would veto such a bill if the Congress were able to pass it. And that's one of the many ambiguities that his statement left.
Listener text: I think Trump is right for once to not come out one way or another clearly. People are not as divided on this and many other things as the politicians and media would like us to believe. In most European countries, abortion is legal with no strings attached up to 12 to 15 weeks and restricted thereafter, writes one listener. But I think it's also important to be clear about what the Lindsey Graham 15 weeks actually is. It's not a guaranteed abortion right for 15 weeks. It's saying that no state may legalize abortion for longer than 15 weeks, but any state may ban abortion entirely. So it's a 15-week limit on what states can do. That's different than, I think, what Glenn Youngkin was trying to do as governor of Virginia, even though he lost seats in the legislature on that. I think he may have been trying actually for a compromise position that, although it was rejected, would have kind of enshrined a 15-week right in Virginia law. What it looks to me from what I've read that Lindsey Graham is doing is trying to say no state may go beyond 15 weeks, but it's okay if a state like Florida has just done tries to ban it completely or almost completely. So that difference is really important, Molly, don't you think?
I do, and thank you for pointing that out. You're right. There's a big difference between saying it's guaranteed up to 15 weeks and saying you can't restrict or you can restrict under 15 weeks, but you can't go beyond that.
Let me also replay the clip of Trump from yesterday and get your take on the confusing way this ends. If we are arguing about, or not arguing about, but if we're discussing whether Trump is trying to sow as much confusion as clarity, listen carefully as he says up to the states, but then implies that it should actually be up to each pregnant woman if they want to hear it that way.
My view is now that we have abortion where everybody wanted it from a legal standpoint, the states will determine by vote or legislation or perhaps both, and whatever they decide must be the law of the land, in this case, the law of the state. Many states will be different. Many will have a different number of weeks, or some will have more conservative than others, and that's what they will be. At the end of the day, this is all about the will of the people. You must follow your heart or, in many cases, your religion or your faith.
So did you hear that at the end when he threw in, you must follow your heart or your religion or your faith? That makes it sound like he supports an individual's right to choose as opposed to a state legislature's right to choose for you. But I don't think that's his position.
Interesting. I mean, I heard that more as a political statement saying you must follow your heart in terms of how you vote on this. But as we know, this is something that Trump does all the time. He speaks in these confusing and ambiguous ways, or he just flat out takes multiple positions on an issue, and he counts on that to muddy the waters and to allow people to hear whatever they want to hear. And so the hope is that, you know, people sort of give him the benefit of the doubt and say, well, I think he's here, and someone else can hear it completely differently. And then, you know, for people who are looking to get to yes in voting for Donald Trump, it gives them sort of permission to hear whatever they want to in his various conflicting statements.
Yeah. We're going to talk about Florida now in this respect. Molly, in brief, what just happened there?
I was actually in the legislative chamber in Tallahassee when the legislature passed the current 6-week ban in Florida. What has just happened is that the Florida Supreme Court has allowed that 6-week ban to go forward. Previously, the state had a 15-week limit that also had, I believe, yet to be implemented pending the Supreme Court's decision. So starting on May 1st, there will be a ban on abortions after 6 weeks in Florida, which is before many women even know that they're pregnant, so many people consider it effectively a complete abortion ban. Prior to this, Florida was the only southern state that hadn't restricted abortion and had become sort of an abortion haven for that reason. But on the basis of polling, it is the most pro-choice red state. At the same time, the Supreme Court issued another opinion allowing an abortion rights ballot initiative to go on the ballot this fall. That measure, if 60% of voters support it, which is a quite high bar, would allow for a right to abortion up to fetal viability, which is the limit in Roe v. Wade, about 23, 24 weeks. And so many, including the Biden campaign, are hoping that this will prove a powerful motivator getting people to go to the polls and vote for abortion rights, particularly, I think, for Democrats. The fact that there will be a 6-week ban in place for about 6 months before the election, they're hoping will sort of demonstrate to people what it's like to live under this sort of a regime, and then they will have an opportunity to change it.
And I think Michael in Miami has something to say about this. Michael, you're on WNYC. Hello from New York.
Hey, Brian. Hey, Molly. Thank you so much for taking my call. Brian, you've been my lifeline to New York, living in Florida for the last couple of years.
Thank you.
So I appreciate it. We used to live in Inwood, not too far. I think this is the supercharge. I don't think people really understand how supercharging this is going to be for Florida. The Senate race is only 3 points. The Biden-Trump race is only 7. And we need 60% to get this passed. I think it's going to be such a big influx of money and energy and power into this state that I think could, I don't know if it'll flip it all the way presidentially, but I could certainly flip it for the Senate. And particularly the fact that this 6-week ban is going into effect in the next few days. And I think people are going to realize how their rights are being taken away. It's very direct. We've got this rights being removed and then a ballot measure right in November. It's almost perfect. It's the best thing I think could have happened to Florida.
Michael, thank you very much for checking in. Call us again from down there. Molly, let me linger with you for a second on the 60% point. You mentioned it. Michael mentioned it. I didn't know about it. Am I hearing it right that it will take 60% of the vote in Florida to enshrine abortion rights?
That's correct. So this measure could get a majority of the vote and still would not pass. That is the threshold for ballot measures in Florida. So if you recall, in Ohio, for example, the last one of these ballot measures that passed, the abortion rights side did win in Ohio, but it got 57% of the vote. So that's a very high bar to clear, and we will see if Florida is able to clear it.
It can work either way, right? I guess the anti-abortion rights camp likes the fact that it's 60% because it takes that 60-40 majority, not 50% plus one. But maybe what Michael was hinting at there is that because the abortion rights proponents would need to get to 60%, it's even more of a turnout generator than it would be if it was 50% plus one, you think?
It's possible. I could also see an argument going the other direction, that it's harder to motivate people when it's this hard to pass something because they may not have a hope that they could actually get there. We've seen this be, again, a very mobilizing issue in ballot initiatives, but not necessarily for candidates. I covered the Florida gubernatorial election in 2022 when the Democratic candidate, Charlie Crist, was hammering this issue very hard, saying, you know, Ron DeSantis has already banned abortion after 15 weeks, and he's going to do further limits if you reelect him. DeSantis, of course, went on to win that election by nearly 20 points. So it's not necessarily clear that voters will take this and apply it to candidates, whether it's the Senate race between Rick Scott and his Democratic opponent or the presidential race. But what we have seen is that when abortion is on the ballot as an up or down issue, it does make a lot of people go to the polls, and those people tend to be Democrats and liberal-leaning independents. So the hope is once you get those people out, you know, maybe they're not motivated to go vote for Joe Biden or vote against Rick Scott, but once you get those people to the polls, that's the way they're going to vote.
And Molly, I think a lot of people missed when Pence came out last month and made a lot of news by saying he would not endorse Trump for president. Most of the media coverage was just hanging that on January 6th. But Pence actually gave three reasons. And one of them was Trump's emerging position on abortion, including specifically with respect to Florida. Here's Mike Pence last month on Face the Nation on CBS.
But look, the states around the country have been advancing the principles of life. I was very disappointed during our presidential campaign when Donald Trump denounced and said a pro-life bill, a six-week bill enacted in Florida, which had already been enacted in Georgia and in Ohio, was, I think, in his words, terrible. Mm-hmm. But look, we're a pro-life party. I mean, I really do believe that there is a national role. I'd like to see our nominee endorse a minimum 15-week ban, but also I'd like to see a nominee that's affirming the sanctity of life as it's debated in states.
So Pence had cited January 6th, abortion as a difference between him and Trump there, and also that Pence supported aid to Ukraine and America's place in the world in that respect, those three reasons. But interesting, Molly, I mean, to give Trump, you know, the nuance that his position deserves, or maybe the proper word is the haze that he's trying to create over the whole thing about what he would actually do if he's reelected. He's leaned into the right side enough to draw that criticism from Pence.
Yeah, well, and Pence, as you alluded to yesterday, called Trump's new position a slap in the face to pro-life voters. But, you know, Donald Trump is the Republican nominee and Mike Pence is not, and neither is Ron DeSantis, who passed that six-week ban and who spent much of his presidential campaign going after Trump from the right, criticizing him on issues, including this issue of abortion, saying that Trump was not conservative enough and wouldn't be true to the desires of conservative and particularly pro-life voters. And we saw that even in a strongly conservative, strongly pro-life state like Iowa, the Republican base was still with Trump. And that's clearly the gamble that Trump is taking here, assessing that the right, the base of the party, the evangelical base of the party in particular, is not going to have anywhere to go in November and is going to stand by him. We have seen this cohort of evangelical voters very, very strongly behind Trump since really the beginning of his political efforts in 2016, and they have stood by him through all of the various controversies, and he is gambling that they will stand by him despite this position that he has taken that has angered a lot of them, just in part because they they love him for other reasons, and in part because they, again, just won't have anywhere else to go in November.
Right. And nobody on the left believes that Trump will stick to any line that he may have, even if he didn't draw it, implied yesterday. So on we go into the undetermined world. Molly Ball, senior political correspondent for The Wall Street Journal. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Brian. Great to be with you.
Brian Lehrer, a daily politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at WNYC.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.